Hey guys, Dave here. Want to let you know that we're about to drop part two of the Alabama Football Podcast 2011 offseason review. Hope you enjoyed part one, and certainly hope you enjoy part two as well. Don't hesitate to reach out to us on iTunes, Facebook, email, the website, and leave us your comments and any feedback you may have. And as always, thanks for listening in to the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Blow the horn, let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keep fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Young and they've got to play against. And make his ass quit! That's our framework! That's our MO with the team!
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready!
Alright. I'm gonna hit this next topic a little more rapid fire. And that's players who still may leave. We've got spring drills coming up. We've got A-Day. It's a very natural time for players to reevaluate where they fit on the roster.
Go to South Alabama.
Where do they fit on the roster? And, you know, for those who are paying attention, when the administrative groupings come out during spring drills, when those are defined and these players start to see where they're literally lining up, which of them decide to stay and which of them decide to leave. And
who's
so,
on your list?
So let me run down my list and you just give a yes or no.
Okay.
And,
give me the name and I'll tell you if I agree with you.
And then we'll have some discussion. I'm going to lead off with your favorite not getting the job done guy, and that's Jarrell Harris.
Jarrell Harris is gone. There's no reason for Jarrell Harris to stay. Just like B.J. Scott, highly touted coming out of high school. I don't know if it's just understanding of the defensive scheme. He's got the physicality. I thought at the beginning of the season when he started the first two games at inside linebacker, the speed at which he was hitting those holes and knocking those running backs back, man, I really thought that he was going to keep a Nico on the sideline. And he just can't find a home. And so he realizes it's time to go so I can have a chance to, you know, to get some film somewhere.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that one. Jarrell Harris, for all his talent, he was a five-star recruit, and if it was an obstacle course, he'd be the leader in the clubhouse. He could not keep Corey Reamer off the field, and in this year, you know, 2 years ago, and in this year with another year in the system, there's any number of players that he could not keep on the field. C.J. Mosley was a sensation as a freshman. And so I think that has to speak to an upcoming senior, you know, about playing time. And then we bring in some top recruits at linebacker as well. So I have to agree with you. I think Jarrell Harris is gonna give a valiant effort in the spring. But I think he ends up with B.J. Scott down in South Alabama, and then I start betting the over on their games. Demetrius Gould, running back.
I think Demetrius Gould stays. I think that he would have every reason to leave because of an Eddie Lacy, and he thinks it's time to move from, you know, well, he was the number three guy, right, who kind of became the 3B, and now he's not going to move up any, you know, in the depth chart. But I think because of his family history with Alabama, he seems like a good kid. He's just a, you know, I think he's in it for the education as well, and to play at Alabama, you know, he gets 10 carries in 2011. I think he's going to be happy.
All right, you changed my mind. The family history with the Goulds, and that changes my mind. In terms of playing time, hey, he's going to be a senior, and Justin Fowler, I think, is going to step up, and we've got some other guys that are going to step in and play the running back position. I don't think he's going to get any material playing time. I think if it's a family tradition that you play through for the Tide, then he plays through for the Tide. Wide receiver, Brandon Gibson.
I think Brandon Gibson stays. I think Brandon Gibson showed some flashes last year against non-conference opponents. I think Brandon Gibson has the, I think he has the tools. I don't know if it's understanding of routes or maybe the new wide receiver coach helps or comfort with the offense or, you know, we also talked about it too. I mean, when DJ Hall went down or got suspended for those ball games, the other wide receivers stepped up because they suddenly said, hey, DJ's not going to catch 10 balls. Well, I think a Brandon Gibson is going to step up a little bit because Julio's not there, and I think he's going to step up.
I think that's fair. I was inconclusive on Brandon. I think you've convinced me here as well with the new coach, Julio gone, increased opportunities. He knows the offense as good as any of the players we'll talk about when we talk wide receivers. I think Brandon Gibson stays as well. Chris Jordan.
You know, Chris Jordan battled some injuries last year. I'm sitting here. I think it was a high ankle sprain. I'm trying to remember what it was.
I think he had a shoulder or something as well.
And, you know, he was a guy that, he was my breakout player on defense.
He was.
I mean, I thought he was going to be a starter inside, and suddenly Darrell Harris starts the year off, and next thing you know, Nico rolls in there, and then the next thing you know, Nico gets replaced by a freshman. I mean, it's just a crowded situation. I mean, he's a converted running back, and I thought he had found a home at linebacker. And I mean, he's a guy that I think goes. I think he's a guy that goes somewhere else because I think he's going to want some playing time.
If I had to bet, I would bet that way. I think that we could see that happen. Offensive lineman John Michael Boswell. He's going to be a senior.
John Michael Boswell, I think he stays. And I only say that because he strikes me as a guy like a Brian Motley and like a David Ross. Those two guys, either they just love the University of Alabama, because those guys never really played significant minutes, right? But they just graduated as seniors, and David Ross was a three-year letterman. I kind of hope a Boswell stays because we got to have 12 to 15 offensive linemen and we need some more mature guys. If guys go down, I want a junior or senior to step in there.
Yeah. It's comforting to have that type of experience in the system, on the bench in case there's a need. You know, you could argue that, you know, hey, he's an inside offensive lineman. And when we did have the need last year, Anthony Steen stepped in ahead of him. And so that speaks to him not really being the guy that, you know, experience be damned. Talent is what rules the decision there, and that he's not going to be the guy that steps in if there's a need.
I don't think he will be, but I think he'll be okay with that.
I think that the determining factor on John Michael Boswell is that he's from Tuscaloosa. He played at County High. He's from Northport. You know, whether his parents pay his tuition and he's not really a scholarship guy, that's open to be, you know, debated, and that's not going to be public knowledge. But I don't think that a Tuscaloosa or Northport native leaves to go somewhere for his senior year. He's going to graduate from the University of Alabama, and by God, he's going to have been on the football team for all of those years. And then, you know, that's going to be, you know, life opportunities that he has and life experiences that he has that, you know, you and I wish we had. Let's move on. Tyler Love, he's an upcoming junior, former five-star recruit. What do you think about Tyler?
You know, Tyler, I think, stays for the same reason. Tyler just, I don't think the boys mean enough. You know, I'm trying to remember the offensive lineman who was the huge offensive lineman that couldn't block worth a day.
Yeah,
was 6'7", 400 pounds.
Yeah, since you brought that up, I'm just gonna go here. That was Bart Ralston.
Yes,
and I remember you railing on Bart Ralston years after he left the university that he wasn't mean enough and that somebody needed to slap his mama before the game and all that. And of course, where we're sitting in the Todd Pride seats is not too far, you know, three rows from where former players have their seats. And I'm surprised that we both didn't get beat up by Bart Ralston on that day. But your story or your analysis there, I think, is true. I think Tyler Love, a couple data points I have here. I think Tyler Love's from Mountain Brook. When I drive through there, it's a nice area. I think it's a nice enough area that a parent could pay in-state tuition. So I'm not sure that he's on scholarship. Again, that's just my speculation. And Wilson Love is joining the team this year, so he's going to be there with his brother. Tyler Love's not going anywhere.
Nope.
I think he's on a daddy scholarship, which, you know, there again, I would have played for the Tide under one of those as well. I use play very relative. Why don't we take a look at a player that you've highlighted in our podcast thus far, and let's talk about Big Ten quarterback crusher Alex Watkins. Is he with the Tide next year?
Alex, not no, but hell no. Alex Watkins is gone because he does not have a daddy scholarship, and Alex Watkins needs to go. He needs to get his degree, and he needs to go start a business with Chavis Williams.
Ooh.
Because those two guys, I'm sorry, those two guys are not what we're looking for at the Jack linebacker. They're both 6'4", 220 pounds. And whenever Courtney came out of the Auburn game and those two guys came in, neither one of them got the job done.
Well, I don't know what business they would go into. I want to try to string a joke together saying that there'd be, you know, turnstile maintenance operators, but they seem to be the cog in the wheel of a turnstile, and so I'm struggling there. I think that before he went into that business, I think there'd be potentially any number of Big Ten teams that would be interested in him. But, Alex Watkins from Brownsville, Tennessee, I love you, buddy. But I don't see you suiting up for the Tide next year, and I'm apologizing to you for that, and probably more for the laughter than anything else. But I wish you all the best moving forward. And so I'm going to go with the last player that I have on my list. I'm sorry, we're going to maybe have to hit the pause button here because we're both about killing over and trying not to laugh. And I don't know, maybe one day Alex Watkins kicks our ass in the stands and that just happens. But I'm going to go to the next player and maybe we can compose ourselves for this discussion. But Kerry Murphy, do you think he's with the team next year? And so my two cents on Kerry Murphy, it's how ironic is it? And so we're doing this podcast and it's like we think we know what we're talking about and we're making fun of players that are going to come, you know, not like us later. But Chris Jordan was your breakout player last year and Kerry Murphy was mine for defense. Kerry Murphy, I just was not impressed with his play last year. He had such a motor the year before. I know that he's been out of high school for a number of years. He could have gone pro, but I think there was no runway there. I have read, and it's all speculation, and again, I want to be careful in trading in that, but I have read that Kerry Murphy may be a medical issue, and again, that gets into a whole topic about the number of medicals that you know we've had under Saban. But I've read that there's the potential for Kerry Murphy to be a medical. I don't have a strong lean one way or the other on Kerry. I go 50-50 with that information. What do you think?
You know, I think Kerry, you know, was a highly regarded player coming out of high school. You know, interestingly enough, you know, he was the starter in front of Josh Chapman at the same, you know, at Hoover High School. And, you know, when he had to go the route that he had to come back to Alabama, we really thought with his motor last year that he was really going to step up. And he got hurt. He did have some, he was banged up in the middle of the year. And I don't know what this medical issue is, but, you know, for us to go out and sign two JUCO defensive linemen speaks a little bit to that. Because Kerry came in that route, and for you to go out and get two guys, there must be something to that.
Yeah, and that's certainly fair. And there wasn't a whole lot that I saw, and I guess I'll qualify it that way. There wasn't a whole lot of reports on what the injury might be, other than he was playing. I heard he was banged up, and then he just fell off the rotation. So whether or not there was any legs to that, or that issue is gonna persist. I guess that's something we'll see in the spring. And that's why he's on this list. Is he a player that through the spring is weeded out or not? And so I think we're both I think in the uncertain button there, if you will. Why don't we switch gears now to recruiting? We talked about players on the way out, two layers of player on the way out. Why don't we talk about players on the way in? And Alabama just recently here in first Wednesday in February is ought to be a national holiday in the state of Alabama, at least of late, as Alabama ranks in, according to the Rivals, the number one or another number one rated recruiting class under Coach Saban. Tommy, I'm just going to throw out a couple just high-level stats just to kind of characterize the class, and then you jump in with some comments. I think the rundowns or the bios and all the players proliferate the web, so we're not going to try to run through that here. That's not what we do, but just to give a little bit of a breakdown, a little bit of analysis of what we see. And so, Tommy, I saw that we signed, and I'm basing all of this off of Rodney's report on Tider Insider, and he does a great job there. But that we have 24 signees. Players change position, okay? So I acknowledge that. But as it was reported, we had 13 of the 24 were defensive players, 11 were offensive players. Of the 13 defensive players, 6 were D-line, 4 were linebackers, 3 were DBs. So a good natural spread in terms of rotation and playing time and how a game evolves, a good natural spread there on the defensive side. And on the offensive side, of the 11, 4 were offensive offensive linemen, and 7 were just generally skill position. And I'm labeling that anything but offensive line. And then there was one quarterback, and I think that's significant. And so I just, my read on that is it's very easy as a fan to follow recruiting and follow the players and read the stars and who's the name brand players and treat it as if it's a fantasy league program and what you're trying to do is accumulate talent. When you're a head coach of a program like Alabama, of course you want to amass talent, but you want to build a roster. And I just think with the 24 signees and the breakdown that I gave there, I just think, wow, we just added a nice new layer to a roster. And if you start layering in that type of distribution that are highly ranked year after year, boy, you're going to build a fantastic team. And I think that's we just another layer in building a fantastic team under Coach Saban.
I would agree with that. And, we talked about that when Saban got here. And Les Miles, you're reaping the benefits of this. I mean, when he left LSU, he left the cupboard full. And that's what he's doing. And, he's stocking talent at Alabama. And he spoke in his press conference and other interviews that he's done that he did not have a left tackle, a young left tackle position, a young guy that he felt like could step up with the maturity to take over for James Carpenter. And he's got 4 returning starters. So what has he done? He tried to go out and find another James Carpenter. And he found a guy who has played in the SEC, unfortunately played at Tennessee. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to get over that. But has come through the JUCO route, and he feels like is a guy who's going to fit the billing. And Saban has shown in his short time in Alabama that if he brings in a JUCO guy, he anticipates or expects that you're going to contribute. And then the other thing is he did not have the athleticism at the defensive line position, specifically defensive end, last year. He did not have the size that he wants. He wants the 6'4", 280-pound defensive ends that can play the run but also rush the passer. And then he also needs the linebackers to play the jack. The 3-4 system for Nick Saban's defense is predicated on a push up the middle, defensive ends with long wingspans on the outside, and the jack linebacker. And so I think he addressed all of that. I'm very psyched about Jesse Williams and the athleticism that he's going to bring. I'm very psyched about Quentin Dial and what Quentin Dial can bring. And so there's three JUCOs that jumps off the page who, by the way, are already on campus. That's the other key. We had 8 or 9 of these 24 signees sign up in January. So they're going to be with the program in the spring. That's huge.
Well, that is significant because they'll get to go through spring drills, and then, you know, and then a lot of the other signees will join over the summer. That's something that Saban has pushed for. They won't wait till August, but they'll join sometime over the summer and attend summer school and get ahead in classes and all that stuff. But you know, 8 or 9 guys that will join in January and get a whole free, if you will, spring practice opportunity and get to compete for that. And I think that is quite significant. If you listen to, and if you've been listening to our podcast during the season, and then today, and you really focus on, you know, what are three areas of need that the Tide has, you could talk about, you know, I mentioned James Carpenter as a big left tackle replacement, and we have a significant need there. And then during the podcast during last season, and we've kind of hinted at it today, we've talked about setting the edge on defense, you know, defensive end, Brandon Dietrich and Lorenzo Washington, you know, players that you wouldn't think we'd miss, but gosh, we did. And then you think of a Terrence Cody, you know, given that push up the middle. And you think of those three needs, and, you know, potentially three of the most significant needs that we have. And what do? We go out, and amongst the 24 signees, we grab three of the top 12 junior college players in the country. And we grab, you know, Vanilla Ice, a.k.a. Aaron Douglas, at the tackle position. So we think he's going to come in and play that. And we grab Jesse Williams for the middle and Quentin Dial for the edge. And so I think that's pretty significant. That's the coach. That is a coach that, again, is not just amassing talent, but is building a roster and identifying what's my long-term need versus my short-term need, and how do I go solve that today with this recruiting class. And I just think that's very compelling. I want to just throw out a very just fantastic fact that I saw. When we talk about Rivals ranking us as the number one recruiting class for 2011, over the last 4 years, counting 2011, Rivals has ranked us a number one class, a number one class, a number five class last year, and a number one class again this year. Now, that's interesting.
Because you really can't count 2007. Because Saban didn't get there until a month before signing day.
So 08 was a number one, 09 was a number one, 10 was a rank five, and 11 was a ranked number one. Now that's phenomenal, okay? But here's what's double extra phenomenal on top of that. During that same time span, only two programs in that same 4 year span had a top 10 class in each of those 4 years.
Now that's a nugget right there, man.
And that was USC and Florida State. And their classes, so for those 4 years, they each had a top 10 class, but they were riddled with sixes, sevens, eights, and nines. Not a top five class. No one in the country had a top five class for those 4 years, except for the University of Alabama under Coach Saban.
Oh, and three of those years was number one.
Was number one, which, you know, theory is you can't go much better than that. And so that's just phenomenal, and so kudos, hats off to Coach Saban and to the Alabama Crimson Tide coaching staff for ranking in those types of classes. I just think, you know, and you can't truly, and so let me layer this on, you can't truly rate a recruiting class until years later because you don't know who's going to pan out. So what do we talk about?
Well, like the 2008 class.
That's fine. We talk about the 08, the 09, the 10, and the 11 are amongst those four, okay? So Sports Illustrated, you know, went back and did, one of their writers goes back and does an analysis on recruiting day and says, well, you can't evaluate classes until years later. So, you know, let's go back and look at the classes 4 years ago. in the 08 Alabama class was ranked as one of the two or three top ranked classes in the country. And so, you know, we're seeing, you know, the first report on those, you know, sort of the end product of those classes, and it's holding true to the result. And of course, we all know the 08 class was, it had some legendary players with Ingram and Julio and Barron and
Dante
and guys, of course, that have won us the national title, and Cody was a part of that class. And so I just think that's phenomenal. I think that as long as Coach Saban is at the University of Alabama, that we're going to continue this type of recruiting. And I'll tell you this, and this kind of relates back to what we talked about coaching changes. Notice Saban is bringing in young, energetic, motivated coaches. If he was going to leave in a year or two, do you think he'd talk Pendry into staying another year? Or would he go get a young guy and bring in? I think Saban's here for some years.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
That's what I think. Hey, let me hit you up with a question. I didn't prep you for this one, but there's been a lot of national crap, and I'm going to call it that, a lot of crap reporting on oversigning. And Alabama's been the target of that, oversigning in gray shirts. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, first of all, I think it happens everywhere. I think that we are, it's a 1-year contract, and these guys should know it coming in that it's a 1-year contract. And for most, in most programs across the country, once they're signed, are they going to be there for 4 years or 5 years unless they choose to leave? Yes. There are a lot of mediocre programs in this country where once you sign up and sign that scholarship, you're probably pretty assured of being there. And I think Coach Saban is treating this to some extent with his background from the NFL. And I don't think that's a bad thing, because I think that I think he's the kind of in-your-face, upfront guy that these guys, I think, know it going in, and it motivates them. And it's a competition kind of thing. And just like he had to get it down to 55 players, you know, before the first NFL game, he's basically saying, I'm able to give a scholarship to my 85 best guys. And you're going to have sour apples. And so some of these guys who have been out in the press talking this, that, and the other, I'm sure there's some sour grapes there.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, we're not the only program that oversigns. We're not the only program that gray shirts. And so I think we're being a little bit of a scapegoat.
Yeah, I am spot on with that. And I want to attack that from a couple different angles just to demonstrate how strongly I believe that. The whole system is geared on oversigning. 85 scholarships is the max, and you can sign up to 25 any given year. Okay, my math says that over a 4-year period, I'm going to exceed 85. So the system is governed on oversigning. I know you're not a NASCAR fan, but there's a saying in NASCAR that says, you know, if you're not, you know, rubbing is racing. If you're not trading paint, then you're not, you know, aggressively racing. And so if you're not reaching out to the far bounds of what's legal within the rules, then you're not competing. And so when the Big Ten whines and moans about, oh, we have rules against oversigning, well, if you're signing 25 every year, then you are oversigning by definition. And if you've put that restriction on yourself, then you're not competing as hard as you need to compete against your competition. And that may be why you're getting your ass wiped every year by the SEC. If you really want to talk about oversigning in the general population, what the hell is it that airlines do every day with every flight that takes off from every airport in the nation? They oversell tickets because they know people don't show up when the flight's gonna go. And so why do they get to oversign and it's not a national fiasco? And let's call out the airlines on that. 2 years ago, I think it was actually 2008, Ole Miss signed 38 recruits. 38. 17 of them are only 17 are on their roster now. And so they a little bit exhausted or exaggerated the overrule situation. And as a result, in fact, They were called onto the carpet, and the entire SEC, ahead of the rest of the country, instituted a rule that said the SEC will only allow our teams to sign 28 players. And so we were at least a year, maybe 2 years ahead of the rest of the nation, the SEC, in signing 28 players. That has been a national mandated rule by the NCAA. Guess how many players, Tommy, USC signed this year?
I don't know.
With 28 being the rule.
How many?
31. Have you heard that reported anywhere?
Of course not.
No, it's all anti-Saban, anti-Alabama. And so I guess when you're on top of the mountain, that you're going to get that. And so I guess we should wear that as a badge of honor. But there's a lot of crap going on out there that's not being reported. And so if you're going to pick on Alabama and you're going to pick on Nick Saban for the gray shirts and for the over-signing, I just think that's lazy reporting and that's lazy analysis, because the analogies or the analogs are certainly are out there. So I'm going to step off my little preachy.
You feel
moment
better
there.
Now?
I do feel a lot better. Thank you very much for allowing that. Why don't we talk about spring drills? We have A-Day, and so this is the last topic. And gosh, I know we're going a little long here, but we're having a great time, and we hope that that you're enjoying listening to us. But Tommy, I want to throw out to you spring drills and A-Day. That's coming up. That's the next big event, if you will, in Alabama football. And I want to ask you what your top, what you look for, what you just kind of just rub your hands together and look forward to in terms of the next storylines that are going to come out of spring practice. And I'm going to save ourselves from ourselves, because every, you know, not only every Alabama newspaper, but every, you know, wire in the service in the country is going to be talking about quarterbacks and AJ McCarron and Phillip Sims, and that's going to be a fantastic competition. But that's not what we do here on the Alabama Football Podcast. We peel back the covers and we look at the stories behind the story. And so AJ McCarron and Phillip Sims are gonna you know, battle it out, and you know, we're gonna have a different starting quarterback. But in terms of the top storylines that we're looking for, the storyline's kind of under the cover, behind the curtains. What are you looking for?
You know, I mean, based on that premise, I think the first thing that would have to jump out at me is I'm looking forward to seeing Robbie Green on the field.
Robbie Green, who's he?
Robbie Green is somebody that we truly missed last year.
We did.
We missed Robbie Green in the LSU game. We missed Robbie Green in the Arkansas game. We probably missed Robbie Green the most in the Auburn game when Mark Barron tore his tricep.
Yep.
And literally had that pass at the beginning of the second half that changed the momentum of the game. Robbie Green was a guy in 2009 who stepped in out of nowhere and played center field for the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Replaced Rashad Johnson?
He replaced Rashad Johnson and really did it well.
Very well.
I mean, he played the center field role, and he was the safety valve that if there was a blown coverage, he caught the guy from behind. The guy didn't make it to the end zone. And so we really did miss him last year. And so I'm very intrigued to see where he fits in with Mark Barron and Robert Lester. Because as you said, and I won't steal your thunder, Robert Lester is a star in the making. And so what is Robbie Green thinking, who's been at practice every day watching this flower bloom, or whatever the analogy needs to be?
I like that one.
He's been watching this all year. And what do you think he's thinking right now? Boy, I was a dumbass.
Well, he has to be thinking that if I had not done what I did to not be able to play, there would be no Robert Lester. And so the question this year would be, you know, potentially when guys going pro, who's going to replace them, and who's this Robert Lester guy would be the biggest question. But the biggest question, you know, that I noted this one as well, you know, how does Robbie Green fit into the mix with Lester? You know, with Barron and his injury, he's going to come back. You know, what's he going to do during spring? We may hold him out because we know what he's capable of, but how does he fit into the rotation given the need that we have to bring in some youth? Because Robbie Green's going to come in as a senior, and Lester's going to be a junior, but Mark Barron's gone. And so we've got to rotate in some younger guys. And so Jarek
Jerry Williams and Nick Perry.
Yeah, or Nick Perry or a Clinton Dix that it was a Hushon Clinton Dix was and, who's a top recruit, and you think, how does he not see the field?
I think he redshirts. Well, I think he does. And then also, what about a Will Lowry? Well, Will Lowry has shown himself that he is deserving of being on the field. And I think he will still be in the defensive rotation.
I think he'll still be in the rotation. I think he may be what allows you to redshirt a Clinton Dix if you can have that conversation with him. But the question remains, how do you rotate Robbie Green, because he's coming in as an upperclassman? How do you rotate him in with the other upperclassmen now and still satisfy the need to play younger guys? And so I think that's going to be something to watch. And I didn't mean to take over your topic, but let me hit some of the things that I'm interested in watching through spring drills. Let me throw a name out to you. Kendall Kelly. He missed nearly all of fall drills last year with a medical issue, and so maybe he's a player. Do we ask if he's even coming back? But he practiced intermittently through the season. He came into Alabama as a top ranked wide receiver, moved to defensive back, and then missed most of the changed his number. And missed most of the season, practice time. And so I'm very interested in what the hell happens to Kendall Kelly and his immense talent. Is he healthy enough to come back and contribute? And which side of the ball? Do you have a thought on that? Or what have you read? What have you seen? What's your gut on that?
I think a Kendall Kelly will come back. I hope he's not one of these guys that just is off again and on again with injuries and banged up for his whole Alabama career. It's a crowded wide receiver core. Kenny Bell showed some flashes. Michael Bowman showed some flashes. Kevin Norwood showed some flashes. Then you've got kids like DeAndre White. There was a highly touted guy who, thank goodness, we were able to redshirt. And so suddenly, you got your headliners and Marquise Mays and Darius Hanks, but losing an Earl Alexander, losing a just because from a depth standpoint, sure, and losing Julio, etc. You got four more spots in the rotation, and so I guess what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way is, if Kendall Kelly's going to take the opportunity, he needs to do it right now.
He absolutely needs to, and you kind of bled through my next topic there, which is a natural, natural lead in is the receivers. We know what we have in Hanks and Mays, and we really need to take a moment and kind of sort of exhale and be thankful that we have Hanks and Mays. There was some speculation that Mays was going to go pro. I think it would have been a poor decision for him at the time, and I'm glad that he didn't. But going in, this time a year ago, Hanks had not been granted a red shirt on his freshman year when he played two plays. He has since been granted a red shirt, and so he's back. And so the fact that we can even sit here today and say that we know that we have what we have in Hanks and Mays, I want to acknowledge the fact that we do have a Hanks and Mays. At the same time, we need more talent and more depth to step up, and I think we have the talent. And if it's a Kendrell Kelly, and it's the names that you mentioned, Bowman, Malone, Norwood, White, Bell, someone's got to step up and take the shots there and take the opportunities. And maybe this is the chance that Norwood comes back over, not Norwood, but Kelly comes back over to offense, which is, I think, is his real true position. And he could potentially be a breakout player, or he could go either way. He could be a breakout player, or he could be a guy that leaves on medical because of his situation last year, which was not completely clear, but what it was. But he could go either way there. The last story that I have noted, and I guess I have two more, but one of the stories that I have noted that I want to watch is the Vanilla Ice, or AKA the Aaron Douglas at left tackle, because we have noted that James Carpenter is a significant loss on the offensive line. And so Aaron Douglas, he played at Tennessee. He was a freshman All-America at Tennessee, which makes me feel some degree of comfort that he can, that he's proven that he can compete in this league. You know, he wasn't in the Big Ten or the Pac-10 or somewhere, wherever, but he was given praise for his play in the SEC. Now, when I look at his rap videos, and I don't spend a lot of time doing that, but I've seen his most recent, you know, Crimson and White, and I just want to say, you know, when we got the fours out, we know what it is, you know, which is my favorite line from that, and I'll post a link for those that haven't heard, so I'm not entirely crazy. But when you look at him in the video, he doesn't look like a left tackle in terms of size. And so I saw someone post quite creatively that instead of doing his 8 mile, he needs to be eating and lifting weights. And so I don't know. We'll see. Again, I guess that's what makes that part of the part of a compelling story for the for the spring practice. And so that's what I'm looking for. Any other storylines that you're looking for that you want to track in spring practice, other than just the glorious return of Alabama football?
You know, just to carry the JUCO theme, it would have to be the JUCO defensive lineman. And just as key as that left tackle position is going to be, you know, it's also very huge what kind of impact that, you know, a Jesse Williams is going to make, and is he going to step in and be a guy that can push the pocket with athleticism? Because the understanding from him is that he can give us a Cody type of presence, but with some athleticism. And a Quentin Dial with 6'6", 315 pounds, who's a guy that we were after in high school, who showed the commitment to come back to Alabama, also get on campus in January. I'm curious what those guys are going to do. And then I guess the other position real quick is linebacker. And just to address linebacker for a second, I think Dante Hightower made a fabulous decision to come back. I think we saw glimpses at the end of the season. It takes a year to get over this injury. And unfortunately, it took him a little longer than a year. And so I hope we see the Dante come back. But when we look,
well, I've always heard this type of injury, it takes a year to be able to get back to the field, but it can take a whole nother year to get back to, you know, normal, to get back to where you were pre-injury. And so he could be a revelation this next year. You know, this is the guy we remember.
This is the guy we remember with Rolando McClain.
Right.
And it speaks to the lack of depth that we've had, that we had to throw him out there like we did last year.
Right.
And just real quick, you know, CJ Mosley, I'm looking forward to seeing what this guy continues to do. And then I guess I have to quickly say, who's going to be on the other side of Courtney Upshaw? Who's going to take that job that Shavis Williams and Alex Watkins weren't meant to take? Who's going to give us that other position on the other side as a linebacker?
Yeah, I noted DL as well. We could go a lot of different ways, and you did up front and the edge, and how that relates to the linebacker and the jack position. There's a lot of dynamic there on that position on you know, relative to the line and the interplay there. But I think that's another great position, you know, another great storyline that we're going to need to spend some time with tracking, you know, through spring practice, the daily drills, and then through A-Day as well. So are you game for coming back and doing something, you know, maybe not running this long, but coming back and doing some, hey, we went into A-Day looking for this, and this is what we saw?
Yeah, I think we definitely want to do something after A-Day. And guys, we know we've run an hour and a half here, but we're pretty passionate about Alabama football, and obviously you can tell we haven't done this in 2 months. So we hope you enjoyed it, and I think we definitely want to come back after A-Day game.
Yeah, we're really excited to have the opportunity to bring this podcast to you. This has been, you know, just a candid minute, and this is unplanned. But this is the kind of discussion that Tommy and I, you know, have when we're sitting around, you know, having an adult beverage on the deck, you know, during the summer. And it's this type of conversation, you know, just sort of topic flowing. From topic to topic, and we tried to build some fences around it for this podcast, and we still went long. But this was the type of of background that really inspired us to, hey, we should record this and just see what the interest is. And we've had some, you know, some very loyal folks, you know, step up on Facebook and step up on iTunes and email us and hey, where's the Michigan State, you know, game and where's the bowl game? And we appreciate you guys out there looking forward to listening to us. We hope we haven't worn out the red carpet with this lengthy episode today, but we've had, you know, people asking for longer shows. So, you know, we're scratching that itch in this one, and we greatly appreciate the folks that are out there that are listening to us and giving us feedback. And we just ask, you know, that, you know, continue to do that. You know, drop us an email, drop us a line on Facebook, let us know what's going on. And, hey, for those that are listening, we do want to let you know that we are taking applications for sponsors, because Tommy, I think we've talked about we're going to do this in the fall. We're going to figure out you know, how we can streamline some of the processes on our side, but we're going to do this in the fall. So we're taking applications for the corporations out there that want to sponsor us in the fall, because I think we could be pretty good about saying nice things about people that are paying us.
Absolutely.
So if you have an interest in that direction, reach out to us. Go to the website, alabamafootballpodcast.com, and there's links out there to email us, and hey, just drop us a line and say hello, let us know you like what we're doing. So with that, why don't we conclude? This has been another episode of the Alabama Football Podcast. We appreciate you listening, and as always, Roll Tide.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the some place they play football.
Every team with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guys playing against and make his ass quit. That's our trademark. That's our MO
as a team. Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
All right, we're rolling. Hang on, why don't you say something? Let's just do a kind of a sound check here. Just say, hey.
Put the mic closer to me.
All right, very good.